I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, 'cause it's only the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying to say, well, I don't know, but I thought it was important just a minute ago. What I'm dying to say can't even be bought, 'cause I lost my ticket on the train of thought.
Welcome to Comic Pop Library, Episode 7. With me today is Mickey. And we'll be reviewing two comic books today. The first one will be Trailblazers, and then the second one will be The Omnibus by Ricardo Delgado, Age of Reptiles. And the first one I'm going to let Mickey take, as it's Trailblazers. I'm going to let him do the duties of who wrote it and everything. So, Mickey, you can take it away.
Thank you very much, Richard. Appreciate it. And it's good to hear your voice and good to be back with Comic Punk Library. The comic I want to talk about today is kind of a hybrid mashup. It's called Trailblazer. It was released back in June, and it's written by a couple of guys who are primarily responsible for the current incarnation of Jonah Hex, that sort of supernatural Western DC hero. If you like Jonah Hex, you're likely to like this comic. It's called Trailblazer, and again, it's Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. Those are the two writers. The art is taken over in this one-shot by Jim Daly and Paul Mounts. There are two covers available. One is by Dave Johnson and the other by Amanda Connor. The contents are the same regardless of which cover you get. It's 48 pages, and it's a one-shot release on the Image Comics publishing label. You all know about Image Comics, right? It was a big 90s phenomenon when all the guys from Marvel and DC kind of got together as a creator-owned company in the 90s, since about 1992. That'd be Todd McFarlane and Mark Silvestri, Jim Valentino, Eric Larson. Robert Kirkman has recently joined up with them, and Richard, I know you're a Kirkman fan with The Walking Dead and all.
Oh, yes. I've been reading that, Invincible, and Wolfman, and I think Jimmy Palmiotti, if I pronounce that right, wasn't he the second wave of Image creators?
Well, very possible. I am not sure. I lost track of them, but I do know that Kirkman has stepped up in a big role at Image, and he has really gone out and looked for some new and interesting talent, and maybe next time when I come back, I'll talk about one of those new and interesting talents in a comic book called Witch Doctor. But anyway, the subject of this review is Trailblazer, which, as I said, is kind of a Western mashup. The interesting thing for me about this one, and that caught my eye, was that it was written by Palmiotti and Gray, who I've admired for their kind of hard-boiled Western work on Jonah Hex, which just recently ended, by the way, since it was subsumed into this brand-new DC reorganization of their 52 titles. Jonah Hex continues in an anthology title called All-Star Western. However, Trailblazer is kind of an odd thing in that it is a mashup of Western, crime drama, and science fiction. So you've kind of got this genre-bending story where you've got a protagonist that's introduced to you in the first part of the book who's obviously a hitman is what he is. The character's name is Jacob. He's an enforcer. And the first maybe 6 or 7 pages is a very fast-paced, extremely violent shootout where he's rescuing a bunch of orphans and nuns. Get that. That just pulls at your heartstrings, right? An orphanage that he obviously was brought up in because he knows the back alleys and the basement tunnels. And it's an extremely violent sort of takeover of this orphanage where he saves the kids and the nuns and shoots all the bad guys. So he's obviously, you know, in a few pages, Palmiotti and Gray introduced this character as sort of a killer with a conscience or a killer with some kind of moral responsibility or whatever. He's caught, however, at the end of this little rescue or this little hit that he's done on these bad guys that have taken over this orphanage. And he's incarcerated in a federal penitentiary. They decide, however, that instead of trying him and putting him in jail or whatever, they're going to do something special with this guy. They're going to send him into the past. So the idea here, or the gimmick, is that for dangerous criminals like himself, the government doesn't want to kill him. They kind of want to put him in cold storage. And there's been a technique developed by government scientists, you know, the famous top secret government scientists, where they're able to send people back in time. He's not the only one, and they've done this several times, and there's basically, turns out, a small community of these transplants living in the Old West, which is where they've sent some of these people that they don't want to kill and they don't want to incarcerate, but they kind of want to have available to them as weapons should the government need them. So Jacob is sent back in time to the Old West in the 1830s, I think. I'm not sure of the exact time frame of this, but what you're looking at is Old West America, and of course, he has to find a way to create his role in the community. And interestingly enough, he becomes a sheriff, which isn't totally unknown. Certainly, if you know anything about real Western life in the Old West, a lot of sheriffs and lawmen were formerly desperados, hitmen, and killers. So it's not uncommon that this would happen, but it is kind of interesting that he becomes a sheriff and then finds a life where he's fairly comfortable. He hooks up with a woman back there, and he has a fairly stable life. What happens, however, is that, you know, and this is the twist on the story, is that the scientists at the time travel division say, well, we can't really risk infecting the past with technology from the future, so we're going to have to send people back to solve this problem that occurred, because the bad guys that Jacob killed in the beginning of the book get hold of the government technology and send their killers back to the Old West to basically take care of our friend Jacob. So the government responds kind of ham-fistedly, and instead of trying to help Jacob, decides, well, Jacob will probably kill all of these bad guys that are sent back. They're not worried about that. They're worried about the contamination of the time stream, and they decide that they're going to issue their own wipe order and send all some people back to basically destroy the entire colony of these transplanted time travelers. So it's kind of an interesting setup. I'd have to say it's a little half-baked in the sense that the story should have probably been longer than it is. It's a one-shot comic, so you basically have, you know, 48 pages to tell a complex story. There are a lot of questions and questionable logic holes about, well, really, would the government do this? Would they send people back to cover up some, you know, problems and anomalies? Would they really send them back with machine guns and modern weapons and that sort of thing? But all in all, I'd say the story's well told, and the concept is high, and so you get a lot of good ideas crammed into a good comic book story. I'll have to say the art is a little bit disappointing. I don't know who Jim Daly is, but he seems to be a competent layout artist. He's finished by a wonderful artist named Paul Mounce, who did a really, really, really nice work over J.G. Jones on the Wanted series that Image also published. Paul Mounce's work really takes some of the rough edges off of Jim Daly's work, but overall I'd have to say the art is probably acceptable, but nothing exceptional in the sense that it tells the story and that's just about it. Most of the characters are fairly flatly characterized, and there aren't a lot of real standout moments in the action other than the fact that it is pretty breakneck from beginning to end. You get a long story, a complex story to tell in a fairly short time frame. So I'm going to give this one a B+. I would also recommend it to librarians who are interested in, or have readers who are interested in the science fiction genre, but like their sort of mashups, you know, want to see a blend of either horror and Western, or science fiction and Western, or hard-boiled and Western. This is kind of all three of those mashups in one comic. So I'd give it a B, but I think it's a good effort. And frankly, I'd like to see more stories set in this kind of a universe where you've got modern-day people going back into the Old West with some of their issues and concerns and sensibilities. So I think the setup is good, and it promises good things for the future. As a one-shot, I would give this a solid B and recommend that if you do collect it, you put it in your adult graphic novel section in the library, because it does have a lot of graphic violence.
And I enjoyed this with the concept that, to me, see if you think it the same way, Mickey, is it kind of felt like a movie. I don't know if they were writing it for that purpose in mind, but that's it was so fast-paced, like you were saying, there was a lot of...
Right, I couldn't agree more. It seemed like a screenplay almost, you know, like a storyboards for a screenplay. Filled in a bit, but you're right. It clearly was a high-concept kind of a movie-oriented or a film-oriented project, probably from the outset. I don't know that it's been sold to any studios, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
This one, I'm like you, this could have been an easy, probably 150, 200-page story if they wanted to flesh it out a lot more.
Definitely.
Because you barely get to know the young lady or him even. You know, you get the peripheral or, you know, what's on the surface, but you don't really get to know what they are as a character inside. I guess they do leave it kind of open-ended where they could do some other stuff with it, but I'm kind of like you with the art. It feels a little bit more cartoony in some instances and not as sharp as... There are some panels that look great, and then there are some panels that you're like, wow, they took some shortcuts here. I don't know if you felt that as well. I know you mentioned.
Well, I felt like it could have had a lot more either detail to the art itself in terms of characterizing each one. Like everyone sort of looks the same. Their faces look the same. You can't really, really pick out individuals in the art. And you know, clearly there wasn't a lot of attention given to the Western authenticity of the Western side or anything like that. It's kind of irrelevant in a time travel story. But still, I think we've got accustomed in a lot of graphic novels to seeing an artist do his homework and really look at some of the details and authenticity of a period piece. And you didn't get that in this, but that's okay. It's not a story that depends on authenticity in any way, shape, or form.
And they did, I guess, try to canvas the areas. They at the very end, they kind of did get rid of the evidence when they rode off into the sunset, which is kind of old Western callback, so that was kind of fun. I enjoyed it. I'm like you, I would have liked for it to be a little bit longer. The first part of it alone, just the assassination attempt and the hostage situation in the orphanage and all that alone could have probably been 50 pages if I was reading a normal book.
Well, we have all become accustomed to decompressed storytelling these days. And so, you know, I don't object to some writers who try to put a real story into a short period of space and time, but maybe this was a little excessive. So.
Just for a fun little, what is probably about 30 minutes, I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. And I think, like you said, the mixing the genres, that's going to appeal to a lot of people.
Well, tell us about Age of Reptiles.
Age of Reptiles by Ricardo Delgado. He lives out in California, and this is one of those that I think is more of a labor of love more than let's see if this will sell or not, because this definitely would not appeal to the general masses per se. It's definitely one that will appeal to them if they would pick it up and give it a try. He does all the artwork and the story work, which I'll get to in a minute. And the colorist for Tribal Warfare and The Hunt was James Sinclair. And the colorist for The Journey was Jim Campbell. Because what I'm reviewing is actually the Dark Horse Omnibus of Age of Reptiles. So it has all three miniseries packed into one nice novel for $25. Looks nice on the shelf when you're putting it with your other omnibuses from Dark Horse. Nice product for being a trade paper and fairly durable. I mean, if you get enough usage, it will have a little bit of wear. He takes his cues from basically archaeology, where we know what the beast would basically look like. We don't really know definitely what their skin coloration would be, so he's kind of gives free rein to what their skin tones would be. So you have some dinosaurs that are multicolored, you have some that are blue, some that are green as well that are kind of normal, and but then you have some that have a purplish tint as well within their coloration. So he takes that cue. But the most unique thing about this book, and what I love about it, is that there are no words to this story. There are no grunts from the animals either. It's purely a linear story with the artwork, or a sequential story with the artwork. He did it this way because there was nobody around back then, so there is no historical type blocks within the panels to give you reference to when this was, or what's happening with this animal at this time, or how they came about. There's nothing like that. They are animals, so they can't talk. There is no humans, so there's no humans to actually talk. And since the, you could say archaeologists, they look at these, and we know what the bone structure is, but they don't even know what these animals sounded like. So he left out all the roars, even, because he didn't want to put any kind of precepts within the reader's mind. It's basically your mind is putting together the story and putting together the roars in it, and he does a great job with this. And one of the reasons I think he does such a great job is he has worked as storyboarding for several films, some of them, just to mention a few, Avatar The Last Airbender animated series. He's done The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, which wasn't the best of movies, but it lets you know it does no storyboarding. But the two big ones, I think, How to Train Your Dragon and The Incredibles, which I think was one of the better animated movies out there. So he does have the experience with storyboarding, and in a sense, this is almost what this is. It's just a book full of storyboards, and he lets the artwork tell the story. And you can definitely tell when a character, or in this case a dinosaur, is in trouble. You can tell when they have a quizzical look, when they tell that they're scared, or like it's a oh crap moment, I'm getting ready to be eaten type of moment. So there is that type of trope, which is kind of hard to convey with just artwork, but he does it to a very great extent. There is one aspect that did get a little old with this series, is the concept of you're not the biggest creature out there. So there was quite a few scenes without the three miniseries where it got a little repetitious, where you had the smaller animal, then you had the predator attacking it and eating it, and then you had the bigger predator come to on top of it, and then the predator on top of that a lot of times. So one or two shots like that was fine, but it seemed like he carried it out quite a few times throughout the whole omnibus. But if you took them as a single series, I think they were fine. For reluctant readers, I mean, they're reading the art. That's purely what they are doing, is reading the art. So this is a real fast read for them. I think most people will be amazed that you can still get a story with just artwork. A lot of people don't look at that concept. And because of that concept, I can see art instructors, whether it be high school or even at the college level, taking this book and giving it to their students and say, look through this. This is how you do sequential art, and it can tell your story. You don't have to have words or any type of text at all to actually do a story. So in that sense, it lends itself to a couple of different areas really well for the educational field. And the colorations are just fun. There's a lot of vista, two-page spreads where the vistas are wide. Beautiful artwork. The colorations are brighter than what you would think. They're not dull. It's more of a brighter coloration, so I give credit to the colorers on that. There's some flying scenes with the clouds and the petrodactyls or pterodactyls, whatever you want to call them now. There's two species of them in one miniseries, or excuse me, in one issue of the Hunt miniseries, where a group is attacking another, and it's just beautiful artwork with the clouds. They're not white per se, they're more of a dusty look because they've just had a meteor hit the ground nearby, so it's not a clear white. It does have that dusty look, but yet it does have the sunlight coming through as well. It was really well done, really well paced. When I first saw this, I guess I'd say when these were. This is an omnibus. These were done back in the 90s, actually. 93, 94, 95-ish area. And I picked up the collected editions. I didn't pick up the individual issues at that point, but I wasn't sure what I was getting into, but once I read the first one, it was a no-brainer to pick up the other two after that for the library's collection. I've enjoyed these immensely. I've given them to other people. I gave it to my daughter, and she was kind of flabbergasted that there was no words. To me, there was, in The Journey, the very last miniseries that's in this omnibus, the artwork does get a little bit more coarser. It's a little bit more busier. So he kind of changed his art style between the first two miniseries and this last one on The Journey, and that's a little jarring to see, but once you get into it, you get used to it, and the colorist is different, so it's a little bit more muted than the previous two miniseries. So if there's one drawback, there is that the style did change and the coloration did change as well. So, but it wasn't enough to hurt it overall. Definitely, if we're giving grades, like Mickey said, definitely I would put this in an A category. A minus to an A. You can have anybody look at this from middle school up. I think it would be perfectly fine. There is animals, dinosaurs killing dinosaurs and stuff like that, but it's not overly bloody. He does it tastefully. There is a little bit of blood, but it's not splattered all over the place. But you do have some scenes where it is, like with the raptors slicing open their prey that they get and scavenging on prey. So there is a few scenes like that, but he doesn't throw blood all over the place like some artists do. So in that, I definitely enjoyed this omnibus. Definitely recommend to any library out there to include into their collection. And I don't know, did you ever get to view this back in the day, Mickey? Or you said you saw a little bit of at least one of the stories?
Yeah, I think the 97 collection, I think he did one in 93, one in 97, and then one in the 2000s. I think one of the 90s collections was in one of our local library's collections, and I was able to look at it. And I was a little taken aback by the nature of the storytelling, which, as you said, depends on sort of kind of an oh wow factor, you know, because there's no words or dialogue. You have to sort of pay attention to how the dinosaurs are interacting. And the story is, there isn't much of one. It's usually a survival story of some sort or another. But I did find that it was captivating because of the intensity and the sheer beauty of the artwork. Obviously, Delgado loves dinosaurs. He's one of those kids that probably drew dinosaurs on his, you know, on his lunch pail and stuff when he was a kid. He really, really likes dinosaurs, and he really spends a lot of time researching them and drawing them and does some neat things with color. I was just going to mention that if you like Age of Reptiles, that Dark Horse Comics has a new anthology book out, which has recently included some brand new material from Delgado. It's another Age of Reptiles story. The Dark Horse Presents number 4, which is on the newsstands right now, has an Age of Reptiles story called The Body. And again, it's the same wordless format where you're basically looking at a survival story of quick and brutal death, and then a sort of a long historical take on what happens to the bones of a dinosaur that's slain. And it's just a real kind of an unusual story, but the Dark Horse comics have supported Delgado for 20 years now in his Age of Reptiles series, and it's really nice that he's continuing that, and Dark Horse is continuing to be his publisher for this pretty popular series of dinosaur stories.
I'm kind of wondering, you mentioning that, I didn't know there was anything in the anthologies. But on the omnibus, it actually says Volume 1. So I wonder if they've contracted with him for quite a few stories, and they'll collect that eventually as well, maybe.
Yeah, it's likely they'll put them all together in a great big bundle. That would be probably the smart thing to do, since they are such standalone kind of arcs.
Right. So that's a possibility in the future. How far? That might be a while if he's just doing 6-page stories. I mean, this book alone was close to, but not quite, 400 pages. So,
and you have to think about how much time and how much detail he lavishes on every panel.
True. And I don't know, did he go back to his old art style in the first two series, or did he stay with the more denser art, the more...
No, it's much denser. It's highly colored, highly processed. If anything, it's probably more detailed than it's ever been. And certainly he's using a lot more digital coloring techniques than he's ever used. And so it's really a whole step up from his work in the past.
So if you're out there and are interested, I would recommend Age of Reptiles. Definitely a good addition to any library's collection.
I'd like to thank one of our sponsors at this time, Music Alley from Mivio. Check it out at music.mivio.com. That is MUSIC.MEVIO.com. Or you can go to our site, Comic Pop Library, for links to Music Alley and our reference links located within our left navigation bar. And now, back to the show.
Our next little bit, we haven't had tips or tricks for a while. I'll just mention one real fast. If you have been following the blog, I put up some pictures of a display we had here of Green Lantern and how we were able to do the display. Very simple. All I did was get somebody within the community. They gave us some Green Lantern toys. I got a few of the comics of my own and picked out some of the collections within our library itself to add up there. And also, what did I do? Oh, the DVDs were Justice League. And there are a few Green Lantern DVDs out there as well. But the headpiece of the collection was a cardboard cutout. I know you're going to groan, Mickey, but it was of the Green Lantern movie with, what's his name, on top of it. I can't even think.
Ryan Reynolds.
There you go. You don't go to movies, but you know who they are, don't you?
Hard to avoid in our saturated mass media culture.
But what I did with that is I went to our local Hastings, and just off the cuff, I asked them what they were going to do with the displays when they were finished with it. And they said nobody had requested them, and it just so happened the day I was there, they were getting ready to tear them down. They said since nobody requested it, it's just going to go straight to the trash. So I said, well, can we take the top part off? And we looked at it, and we were able to. And I said, well, would you mind if I took this top part then? They were more than willing to let me have it. They just trashed the rest of it. So don't be afraid to ask for something, because you just might get it. And it's kind of a cool little headpiece if you go to the website and you can see it there. And it definitely makes the display stand out even more. Some other business that we need to discuss. We're doing a little bit of change. Mr. Royce Kitts, he got a little busy in his job. He's taking a leave of absence. It's pretty much an indefinite, but he might swing back by occasionally, he said. We mentioned last time that Venus was unable to continue. And Mr. Mickey's found out how busy he has become with being the president of our state's library association. So it was definitely a boost for him, but he's finding out with some of the perks comes the hard work that has to go in with it. So he's hard at work planning our new conference and everything else involved with the presidency of the Kansas Library Association. So he's been under the gun, I guess you could almost say. You having fun with it yet, Mickey?
Well, it's always fun, but there's only so many hours in the day. So with regret, I'm stepping away from the podcast for a while.
So we will still continue the podcast. My family and I are still doing some of the movie reviews. I have contacted some other individuals that will be stepping in to be hosts. The format will change slightly. We will still have the graphic novels and the Japanese manga whenever I review that. But we're going to start including movies and also novels. And we'll probably do a show about once a month still. That's what we're planning on. And when Mickey gets all finished with his duties as the KLA president, he's going to be coming back and joining us as well. So that'll probably be looking at the calendar, probably about 6 months to 9 months. That's right. So it's very strenuous job and sometimes probably a little stressful, but he doesn't let it show. He's a true gentleman. So, and I enjoy looking forward, and I'll have to say we'll have to reserve Witch Doctor then for you. You said
please do. I'll look forward to it. It's a great story and lots of fun.
So the next time we meet, we'll have Mickey do Witch Doctor. I'll reserve it. We'll introduce the new host at that time and let everybody know who they are. And I'll be updating the blog as well to get their information up there. But Mickey, it's been fun. It's always fun visiting with you.
Likewise, and I hope everybody keeps reading. Keep reading those comics.
Definitely. Everybody enjoy, and until next time. Have a good one.
I could see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.